in this episode.
And what they found is that critical strains of gut bacteria that are found in healthy children and adults tend to be lacking significantly in babies born by C-section. And instead, what they actually have are harmful microbes that are very commonly found in hospitals.
Learn to perform. Practical lessons so that you can immediately learn to optimize your health, happiness, and performance.
As always, I like to start off each episode with an expression of gratitude to someone or something that has really improved my life. Today, I would like to give thanks to Naveen Jain, who is the founder and CEO of Viome, among other notable companies, including Infospace, which actually made him a billionaire in just a few years after founding. I first listened to Naveen on a podcast with Ben Greenfield, and he's actually been on a few of them, and I was blown away by his passion for information, his philanthropic work, and his determination to innovate the way we live. And a big part of that is Viome, the company that offers comprehensive microbiome testing to help people try to fully understand their unique health needs. And a little bit later, I'm going to talk about how I took the MyBiome test and how it has helped provide me with some additional insights into how my microbiome functions. So, the microbiome is the complex ecosystem of trillions of bacteria and viruses living in your gut. Ongoing scientific advancements are demonstrating how the health of your microbiome may be related to every component of your health, and taking care of your microbiome should be a top priority. In this episode, you will learn what the microbiome is, how it influences your health, and how you can keep it healthy through lifestyle and diet. So, what's the bottom line? We are going to break this high-level overview of the microbiome into three sections. Number one, an overview of the microbiome. Number two, how the microbiome influences your health. And number three, how your lifestyle influences your microbiome. Number one, an overview of the microbiome. The human microbiome is composed of bacteria, viruses, microbes, and they live in and on our body. So I should clarify that it is not solely in your gut. There is a gut microbiome, but there's also a skin microbiome that lives on your skin and an oral microbiome that lives in your mouth. And these are all unique ecosystems that we have a relationship with. Incredibly, these ecosystems have tremendous potential. They have an incredible amount of potential to impact our physiology, both positively in terms of good health and negatively in terms of disease. In terms of the gut microbiome, one of the main ways that it influences our health is by contributing to metabolic functions. It protects against pathogens, and it largely influences the immune system. As far as metabolic functions are concerned, the gut microbiota are really, really important to digestion and nutrition. And this is because they are necessary to break down and actually digest a lot of the foods that we consume. And further, through those processes, they can actually generate nutrients from substrates of the food that are otherwise indigestible by the host, so by us. So without having proper gut bacteria, a lot of foods you eat, you may not be able to get the benefits from because you can't properly digest and absorb the nutrients. In fact, Lucy Mailing, an expert in gut and microbiome, who I have listened to on Ben Greenfield's podcast and read some of her work, actually notes that there is a lot of research that is showing that these microbes are responsible for synthesizing vitamins such as B12 and folate, which are super important for health. They can regulate gene expression. So if we go back to episode 20 on epigenetics and gene expression, they can play a huge role in that. They also produce short-chain fatty acids that are super important in terms of appetite and energy. And they can even influence neurotransmitters. And neurotransmitters are really the key to so many aspects of mood and cognition and energy and performance. So they have a huge impact on so many things. So that's just a very basic overview. And it's going to start to make a lot more sense as we go in. So moving on to number two, how the microbiome influences your health. The microbiome has been correlated to a lot of different chronic diseases. And in one 2019 research paper that reviewed a ton of different research, it found that the following chronic diseases may be directly related to your intestinal microbiome, including inflammatory bowel disease, IBD, type 2 diabetes, colorectal cancer, and cardiovascular disease, as just a brief summary. Perhaps one of the most important correlations between chronic disease and health issues and the health of the microbiome is that it has been found that up to 75% of the human immune system is found in the human gut. And therefore, the ecosystem, that microbiome that is in the gut that controls so many of those processes, has a massive influence on your immune system health. This is also another reason why diet is so important, because not only is diet super important because that is literally feeding your immune system, but it is also feeding the microbiome and the ecosystem there that influences your immune system. So having good quality foods, foods that can nourish the microbiome, whole foods, we're going to talk about a lot again today. Whole foods are super important. Another common outcome with poor microbiome health is a leaky gut. And you may have heard of a leaky gut. You may have also heard of a leaky brain. Essentially what it is the barrier between the intestinal tract and the bloodstream is compromised. And what it does is it allows toxins and antigens to enter the bloodstream through the gut. Instead of having selective permeability, it is kind of broken down, it is weak, and it allows the bad stuff into your bloodstream. That's the best way to think about a leaky gut. So you're just letting the bad stuff out of your gut into your body. Now, it has been found that a healthy gut flora, so having a healthy microbiome, is super important to maintaining the intestinal barrier. And this is because beneficial probiotics such as Lactobacillus and Bifidobacterium have actually been shown to increase the expression of tight cell junction proteins, which is necessary to keep the epithelial barrier tight and prevent those toxins and antigens from crossing over into the bloodstream. An interesting note is that alcohol consumption can cause gut permeability, and which is a big reason why alcoholic liver disease, a lot of people will experience some symptoms of a leaky gut because they are losing the integrity of that barrier. Another interesting point to mention is that there is growing clinical evidence about the gut-brain connection and how the central nervous system is influenced by the microbiome. One of the interesting findings is that beneficial bacteria, again, such as Lactobacillus and Bifidobacterium, can convert an amino acid glutamate into GABA. Now, GABA, which stands for gamma-aminobutyric acid, is a neurotransmitter that has been directly implicated with anxiety and depression. And the reason is because the presence of GABA, it helps to relieve anxiety and reduce stress, improve sleep, and this is done by inhibiting or slowing down certain brain functions. Going back to Lucy Mailing, she also talked about a number of different studies that connected microbiome health and changes in your microbiome to a number of different diseases and issues, including some of the ones I mentioned earlier, such as obesity, diabetes, IBS, eczema, heart disease, autoimmune disease, and more. However, she also notes that a lot of these studies are extrapolations based on animal studies using diets that contain a high amount of soybean oil, lard, and refined sugar with very low fiber. So again, just with any study, there are restrictions and limitations, and you have to take it a little bit with a grain of salt. But the general trend continues to show that altering microbiomes can have significant impacts on health. So, number three, how lifestyle influences your microbiome. This is where we're really going to start to get into it. Let's start off with a big one, and that's going to be diet. Amazingly, in a 2019 study, it was reviewed that the Western diet, the standard American diet, has profound effects on the diversity and populations of the bacteria and viruses and the microbes in our gut. Generally speaking, I'm not the biggest fan of epidemiological evidence. However, an interesting study noted that there was a 4 times increase in obesity risk for immigrants within 15 years after entering the U.S., largely due to the standard American diet. That is a little bit concerning. But more specifically on diet, let's talk a little bit about probiotics and prebiotics. So probiotics are live organisms that are supposed to have a benefit to the host, which would be us. And the most common ones are ones that we have mentioned previously, Lactobacillus and Bifidobacterium. Generally speaking, there is a lot of good evidence suggesting that having appropriate levels of probiotics can have significant health impacts and definitely help to treat acute infections. Now, prebiotics, which are often confused, essentially serve as a food for the probiotics, which are live microorganisms. And this relationship between prebiotics and probiotics is actually referred to as being symbiotic. So basically, for something to be a prebiotic, it can't be digested in the upper GI tract. And then it has to be able to be fermented by microbiota. And what this does is this helps the existing bacterial population grow and become more diverse and therefore help improve the overall microbiome. And in fact, there are a lot of studies that have shown that prebiotic administration alone can have a significant improvement on a lot of health outcomes, largely due to the influence on the microbiome. In terms of diet specifics, there are a lot of different ways to approach this, but I'm going to start off with Dr. Will Bolsiewicz, who is known as Gut Health MD, and he is a gastroenterologist and an expert in everything related to microbiome. And I first listened to him on a couple podcasts, and He's very well spoken. Recommends the most important thing to have a good microbiome is to eat a large diversity of plant foods. And he notes that the most important thing isn't so much the quantity of plant foods, it's the diversity of plant foods. Different plant foods, different diversity of foods will enable different bacteria and a wider diversity of bacteria. So the most important thing is diversity. Now, he is generally a supporter of a whole food plant-based diet, although I believe he includes some animal products. However, I think his diet is largely plant-centric and definitely focused on fiber. He does have a book called Fiber Fueled. Anyways, he also notes that microbiome responds to dietary changes rapidly. In fact, within just 24 hours, there can be a drastic change in the microbiome due to a change in dietary intake, although the microbiome generally is stable over time. Another point he mentions is that fermented foods are really, really good to eat, and this is because fermentation requires microorganisms. So therefore, it is suggested that eating fermented foods can help to improve the diversity of your gut bacteria and therefore improve health outcomes such as intestinal permeability and barrier function. Now, while a lot of research and emphasis on microbiome and diet for a healthy microbiome has been placed on eating a lot of fiber and plant-based foods, what about doing a keto diet? So going back to Lucy Mailing and her conversations with Ben Greenfield, they have both talked that a ketogenic diet has actually been shown that it may have a lot of major health outcomes for the microbiome and overall health. An interesting note that Lucy talks about is that from an evolutionary perspective, our microbes have co-evolved over a long period of time with our ways of eating and diet, which would have likely and almost certainly included long periods of fasting and ketosis when carbohydrates were scarce in between either big hunts or during seasons where plant foods were not readily available, such as during long cold winters. Taking this perspective into consideration from an ancestral perspective, logically, it would make sense that our microbiome would be adapted to periods of fasting and ketosis. Note that this isn't mentioning a permanent ketosis, but having some sort of switching on and off between carbohydrates and intermittent ketosis could be very, very beneficial. And in fact, one of the main mechanisms through ketosis is that it generates beta-hydroxybutyrate, which is one of the main ketones produced. And obviously this can be done through fasting or through the ketogenic diet, but you have to be in a state of ketosis. And what that can do is it can replace butyrate in the gut epithelial cells. And so a lot of focus is on, well, you need fiber to create certain substrates and short-chain fatty acids. However, through fasting and through beta-hydroxybutyrate, it is possible to achieve the exact same benefits and accomplish the same task. So it may not be entirely necessary to use fiber to get the short-chain fatty acids to accomplish this. Ketones and beta-hydroxybutyrate may work just as well, potentially if not even better. In fact, Lucy calls upon a 2019 study in Cell, which is one of the top journals out there, scientific journals out there. And it found that mice on a ketogenic diet actually increased in the total volume and functionality of intestinal stem cells, which sped up regeneration of the gut barrier after injury. So definitely a reason for some optimism for the ketogenic diet in terms of its benefits on the microbiome. Taking this one step further, I want to talk a little bit about a carnivore or very, very heavily animal-based diet with very few plants. And I don't want to go into animal versus plant-based nutrition. I'll save that for another episode. But I just want to talk about some highlights as it relates to the microbiome. Dr. Paul Saladino, the author of Carnivore Code, wrote about a few points talking about how even on a full carnivore diet, microbiome health is still very much possible. So number one, he points out there are a lot of studies that show that fiber, while it improves stool frequency, one of the first points that he discusses is that plant fiber feeds bad bacteria in the gut just as much as it feeds the good bacteria. So just because you eat a lot of plant fiber doesn't mean that you're solely improving good bacteria in the gut, because fiber is a source for all the bacteria. So that's not necessarily going to have a net positive outcome. Further, he notes that fiber is super important for the development of short-chain fatty acids such as butyrate, which is a crucial energy source. However, as we just discussed with the ketogenic diet, which would be the same for a carnivore diet low in carbohydrates, through beta-hydroxybutyrate and ketones that are produced, it is completely possible to substitute for butyrate. Further, because a lot of plant foods come with what Dave Asprey coins as anti-nutrients, they are molecules that are connected to it that make it harder for us to absorb. A lot of dietary fiber may actually decrease the bioavailability of nutrients that we eat and nutrients that get absorbed because we can't separate them because of the fiber interacting with it. Further, he also calls upon the same point that Lucy called upon, and that is going back to ancestral living, where there would have been periods where plants were most likely a fallback food because food was scarce during cold winters, harsh winters, and extended periods of fasting in between a big kill and the next meal. So therefore, it seems logical that our body should be flexible in adapting between animal products and occasional plant foods, and that having an animal-based diet could be a more natural way in which our microbiome is designed to function. Finally, he also talks that a lot of the studies talking about the benefits of plant diversity are based on epidemiology studies. And epidemiology studies are basically when you have a ton of information from a ton of different people, and then you look for statistical correlations, but it's often extremely, extremely hard to isolate single variables and point true cause and effect. And it's more correlation than causation, and therefore epidemiology studies are often not seen as a most reliable source. For example, a lot of the studies that promote fibers being super important call upon the fact that low-fiber diets have issues. But a lot of the low-fiber diets referenced are from the standard American diet, which is high in refined seed oils, fructose, glucose, and all other sorts of preservatives. So to say that fiber is necessarily the reason for poor health is potentially insufficient. But again, we can get more into animal versus plant-based another day, but there are a lot of different perspectives on it. But depending on what diet you follow and the lifestyle you are living, there are definitely ways that you can use diet to improve or to negatively impact your microbiome and your overall health. So diet is critical. Another factor that is actually super interesting is exercise. And this is something that Ben Greenfield and Lucy Mailing have also talked about a lot. And that is that it has been shown that exercise can actually increase microbial diversity. In fact, studies between competitive athletes and non-competitive athletes, I don't want to say regular people, but non-competitive athletes, have actually shown that there is generally a larger diversity of the microbiome in those athletes. However, there's also a large body of research that shows that excessive high-intensity exercise has actually had a negative effect on your microbiome and your gut health. And this is consistent with what a lot of people talk about. For example, David Sinclair, who is the author of Lifespan, All About Aging, or Dr. Ben Lynch, who is the author of Dirty Genes and talks a lot about healthy aging. A lot of people strongly, strongly recommend regular, moderate to high intensity exercise is important. However, overtraining and not allowing yourself to recover and training with extreme intensity for extreme durations can often do more harm than good for overall health and bodily functioning. Now, of course, if you are an elite athlete, that is different. And there are a lot of studies that show that endurance athletes or high-level athletes do have higher levels of overall health. However, if you are looking to optimize your gut microbiome or your general health, moderate to high intensity is more than sufficient. You do not need to run ultra marathons. Okay, moving on. A 2018 study talked about the impact of antibiotics, and antibiotics are basically like dropping a bomb on your gut. Antibiotics do not selectively eliminate bad bacteria or bad viruses. They take out everything in sight, which means that a lot of good and healthy bacteria and viruses will also be killed off. And it has largely been shown that antibiotics can have a devastating effect on the microbiome, especially if they're prolonged use. Ideally, you want to try and limit antibiotics as much as possible. In fact, research shows that antibiotics administered early in life actually have a profound effect on gut microbiome for the entirety of life. They have even been connected to the possible development of obesity, asthma, and IBS, among other disorders, later in life. Another interesting topic is fasting. Now, intermittent fasting, longer multi-day fasts, and even fasting mimicking diets have been shown to improve gut barrier function. They have also been shown to increase microbial diversity and in some cases, reverse intestinal inflammation. So fasting actually has a lot of evidence to show that it may help with your gut. And one of the interesting notes that Dr. Andrew Huberman talked about on his podcast is that there are a lot of different studies that indicate that prolonged fasts may be beneficial to reset and strengthen the microbiome, because even though the microbiome decreases during the long period of fast, it is shown to come back stronger once food is reintroduced. So this can be an excellent way to reset. Another topic that comes up, it seems, every week is sleep. Sleep is important. And Dr. Matthew Walker, he actually talks about the fact that sleep has been correlated to microbiome issues. So getting quality sleep is super important. And before we move on, there are two other things that I want to talk about that I think are important and maybe don't get enough attention. And that is birth and breastfeeding. So number one, there was a study in Nature, which is, again, one of the gold standards of scientific research, that came out recently, I think in 2019, that analyzed vaginal birth versus C-section birth, and they found that babies that are born via C-section are missing key microbes. So this study was done with nearly 600 births in the United Kingdom, and what they found is that critical strains of gut bacteria that are found in healthy children and adults tend to be lacking significantly in babies born by C-section. And instead, what they actually have are harmful microbes that are very commonly found in hospitals. And the reason is that during a vaginal birth, that is the first exposure for a baby to a ton of different bacteria and viruses. And that really sets the foundation for the microbiome that they are going to develop. Now, interestingly, comparing vaginal births to C-section births, after a few months, the researchers found that their microbiotas grew more similar. However, there was one very common and very important bacteria in the group of Bacteroides that was lacking. And on average, 9 months later, around 60% of the babies born by C-section still had almost no Bacteroides in their guts. And this specific type of bacteria is super important because it has been directly linked to immune health and inflammation. Going back to epidemiological studies, there have been a lot that have actually found that children born C-section have an increased risk of asthma and obesity later in life. And this could be directly related to the microbiome. Another reason is also that mothers who have C-section births receive antibiotics that can cross the placenta. In addition, these babies also generally spend longer in the hospital, and they also receive microbe-filled breast milk later in life. And that brings us to the next point, which is breastfeeding. Now, breastfeeding has been shown in a lot of studies to be the natural and the best way of feeding an infant, and it is because breast milk provides this perfect balance. Imagine that the body has this perfect balance of nutrients and bioactive ingredients perfectly prepared for life on Earth. Isn't that amazing? One of the most important that can't be replaced in formula is human milk oligosaccharides, so HMOs, and they are very, very important because they have anti-adhesive properties that affect the immune system, but they also are critical for bacterial floral development. Infant formulas do not have HMOs. HMOs come from the mother and they come from breast milk. And so when it comes to developing an immune system, fighting viruses, and creating the optimal microbiota, breast milk with these human milk oligosaccharides is incredibly, incredibly important. And another molecule that should be mentioned as well is colostrum, which is the first food that every newborn mammal, including humans, consumes. And it is secreted by the mammary gland during pregnancy. Now, HMOs and colostrum have become so widely regarded as being critical to developing a healthy gut microbiome that there are now colostrum supplements, which are extremely, extremely popular. And there are many people that are now trying to create supplements with HMOs, with the human milk oligosaccharides, and even from the likes of Ben Greenfield and other biohackers are doing everything they can to try and get high quality sources of HMOs and colostrum as ways to help a microbiome recover and develop, especially for people that may have had significant damage due to antibiotics or other issues in the past. So there's a ton of promising research, but for the soon to be mothers or current mothers, it is definitely, or people that are looking to start a family soon, it is definitely heavily worth understanding the implications, if possible, of vaginal birth and breastfeeding. So moving on to my personal experience with the microbiome. This section isn't going to be very long. I don't have as much to talk about. It is very hard to say what my microbiome looks like. I've only had antibiotics once in my life, so I think I'm fortunate to be in a good situation in terms of that. I have also experimented with a lot of different diets. So I have done an extended period of time with a whole food plant-based diet, and I was focused on diversity, fermented foods, creating the optimal gut profile, largely based on the advice of the gut health MD himself, Dr. Will Bulisitz. And I generally felt good, but I definitely felt bloated and gassy pretty often. And again, that is not necessarily a reflection of the microbiome, but they're definitely related, so it's hard to say. I have also practiced extended fast, and this was during and after whole food plant-based diet. I have done extended fast up to 120 hours, which I slowly refed with foods that are rich in probiotics and prebiotics to try and rebuild my gut profile. I've also done multiple 72-hour fasts and even more 48-hour fasts. And often if I am feeling off or feel like I have really slacked on my diet for a recent period of time, I like to do a quick 48 to 72-hour fast, kind of reset the gut, come back with some good quality foods, deliberately selected foods. I find that often helps curb my cravings. I usually feel good after the fast. It's beneficial. So I've experimented with that, but it's hard to say what impact that has actually had on my gut. And I've also experimented with a carnivore diet and currently more of an animal-based diet, a little bit more lax, and I felt very good. I've definitely had less hunger, less bloating, less gas, overall optimal energy. But as far as the microbiome is concerned, it is hard to say exactly what that looks like. It is expensive to get testing done, and I've only got my microbiome tested once, and I can't continually do it over and over with different diets to see exactly how that looks like. So maybe in the future one day I'll be able to have the luxury of doing more intensive testing on myself, but I can say that I do feel generally better with an animal-based diet, including some plant-based foods such as berries, low glycemic fruit, avocados, dates, dark chocolate, and occasionally some sweet potatoes or peanut butter as well. So I actually did have my microbiome tested with Viome, and it gives you a ton of different insights into a ton of different profiles and potential considerations for your health. I don't want to go into too much detail and spend time on it, but I'd love for you guys to check it out for yourself. If you go to the website on Viome, they have a ton of information with the gut intelligence test. It tells you exactly what you may learn from it. But a few interesting considerations that I found was that, for example, it was telling me that I was eating too much peanut butter or that I should not eat peanut butter due to the presence of certain bacteria in my gut that are generally associated and found in peanut butter. And interestingly, as peanut butter being one of my favorite foods, prior to taking the test, I had been eating a sizable portion pretty much every day for a couple months or so. So it's amazing just how that one specific aspect of my diet can show up in your gut profile, and they can detect it and say, you know, you have too much growth in a specific type of bacteria. Maybe you should cut back. So I have cut back on peanut butter knowing that as well. I've also cut back on peanut butter due to the high omega-6 to omega-3 ratio. That's another topic for another episode. But it's interesting because it also shows you which foods are optimal for you and which are not. So for example, some superfoods that a lot of people consider like kale, for me, it said that that is not an optimal food for me or for my gut. And that may be the case for a lot of people. But it also then said that certain foods are really good for you. And so it's very personalized. I don't have my information with me right now, so I can't pull upon it or read it out. And there's no point in doing that. But it is definitely interesting if you want to get a personalized insight into your microbiome and what foods you may do. So if you, especially for people that are having gut issues, this may be a great way to get some insights to create a personalized nutrition plan that can hopefully help you feel better. Because again, there is no one diet, there is no one food type, there is no one approach to having a healthy microbiome. It is individualized. It is different for everyone. So the goal is to help you figure out what works best for you. So with that, we're going to move into what can you do? Now, I am not a medical professional. So if you want more information, you should seek out professional advice. But here are a few of the key points that we have talked about and ways that you can improve your microbiome health. Number one is to build a healthy microbiome. So you can do this through a diversity of whole foods, whatever your diet is, vegan, whole food plant-based, keto, carnivore, animal-based, or anything in between. Focus on whole foods as much as you can, organic foods and grass-fed foods as well. And if you are eating a lot of plants, Dr. B says that the diversity of plant foods is the most important consideration. Also, if you can, try to include fermented foods, kefir, and foods with pro and prebiotics to help build a healthy gut microbiome. And perhaps the most important thing is to realize that food is information. With every meal, your internal ecosystem will change. Therefore, we should be very diligent to make sure that we are feeding ourselves high quality food. You feed yourself high quality food, you'll get high quality results. You feed yourself low quality food, you will get low quality results. Another consideration is to try fasting to reset your microbiome. Likely a prolonged fast will have a larger impact in terms of resetting, but if you do find that you maybe have some issues, that may be an approach to help you reset, start fresh with a clean diet, and maybe build healthier microbiome. A second piece of advice is to try and get tested. Personalized testing is really the only way to discover what may be optimal for your gut, because no one is the same and no one diet or food type is 100% certain to work or not work for you. I recommend Viome. I did it. It was extremely comprehensive. It has an easy app. The results come quick. It's a super easy test to do. It is highly regarded. So that's an excellent source. I know there are other ones out there that you can look up as well. But even without getting tested, another thing that you can do is just experiment with diets and take note of your symptoms. So as you try different diets, journal, write down, log symptoms, log your meals, and start to find patterns. Be very, very analytical with your approach to figuring out what foods you are sensitive to and what you can tolerate. Perhaps some form of an elimination diet may be the best way to do this, to cut out certain foods, slowly re-implement them one at a time, and see which ones trigger symptoms. That may be a great way for you to figure out, hey, this isn't working due to some sort of insensitivity. Maybe that is related to your microbiome. And the third key consideration is to avoid medication as much as possible. For example, antibiotics are like an atom bomb. They are just cause destruction. In many ways, also other over-the-counter medications can have significant impacts on microbiome health. And in terms of living naturally, if you are a young mother or expecting, research indicates that if possible, a vaginal birth and breastfeeding are preferable over formula for your baby's health and microbiome. Again, that is something to talk with a medical professional about further. So those are my big 3 points, and I just want to follow up with a few more points from Lucy Mailing in her summaries of what is important. And she says, a few of the best ways to help promote a healthy gut microbiome include a healthy combination of fiber, exercise, fasting, ketones, which you may take or which can be achieved through ketosis, and potentially butyrate. And she also notes that supplementing with butyrate, colostrum, and in some cases even zinc, glutamine, arginine, or curcumin can actually help as well. Now, as a teaser for some future science, I would like to note that there is a lot of research showing that fecal transplants, which may sound like a turnoff to some people, is an emerging intervention with incredibly promising results, in which essentially the fecal matter from a person with a healthy microbiome is transplanted, allowing someone who has a poor microbiome to flourish and to grow. And it has shown incredible promise as being one of the best ways to potentially fix gut issues. So if you do have some serious gut issues, or if you're interested, I suggest looking that up or talking to a medical professional as well, because that may be an option and an intervention that could make a huge difference for a lot of people. Now that we've done talking about all of the gut impact, let's just close off with a quote from someone that I consider to be one of the thought leaders in science and health, and that is Zach Bush. And he says that, quote, our gut microbiome is a direct extension of the nature that we touch, end quote.
To discover more, this episode with all citations is available on the website, and you can also contact me on social media with any questions or comments. If you found this episode useful or think that it may help someone else, I encourage you to pass it along. Thank you all for joining me on this journey to lifelong health, happiness, and higher performance. And remember, always be grateful, love yourself, and serve others.